Back to the Midday Grind with Martin and Marlo on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. This is the Midday Grind here on KFNS, 590 The Fan. I'm not Charlie or Matt or Martin. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. We're usually hosting the Game Time AM show 5 to 7 every morning, Monday through Thursday, here on 590 The Fan. We're filling in. Martin's still on vacation. Charlie's on assignment in Columbia for the introduction of the new basketball coach, Konzo Martin. I'm sure we'll talk about the Illinois coaching change here in 1 second as we get Will Leach on the line. Will Leach is the senior writer for Sports on Earth. He was the Deadspin founder. He writes for New York Magazine, New Republic Movie Critic. I mean, you write everywhere, don't you, Leach?
Yeah. You know, I'll write for anyone who will have me. I wrote for a very long time, never getting paid for it with nobody reading it. So now they have the opportunity. I feel like I got to take every chance I can. This is fun. This is what we decided to do. So
yeah, have words while travel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I pretty much have read you, I think, everywhere. I own a couple of your books, and I have enjoyed each one of them. So thanks for coming on this afternoon. I think the first thing...
Pleasure.
Yeah, and we could have like the Will Leach hour, because you basically could hit on like every topic we could think of St. Louis related for like the next hour, but we got you for like...
Including 50. The Amish Buffet in Tuscola.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Great place to get wood, too. Lumber. It's a great lumber place. They do lumber very well enough.
Thanks for clarifying that, by the way. So, over the weekend, you were in beautiful Buffalo, New York. Is it still kind of wintry up there in Buffalo, New York?
Yeah, it's wintry, but their definition of wintry is very different. I remember it was right after the big storm. I live in Georgia now, so I was fully expecting, you know, the storm's crazy. I wasn't sure my father was going to take off. And you fly into Buffalo, and they've just paved, like, basically the entire airport is under, like, 4 feet of snow, except for the path for the runway where the planes land. Buffalo can handle snow. They are not scared of anything. I always respect that about Buffalo. You think, what things that would shut down any other city, Buffalo just kind of yawns and says, come on, fly on in, land in our 4 feet of snow. We're not worried. And we handled fine, so I was able to be there for a pretty fun weekend.
So you saw probably the most exciting game of the NCAA tournament. Now, I know early on in the tournament, you may have claimed that the tournament was kind of boring, and then it kind of started rationing up, probably with the Wisconsin-Villanova game that you saw in person, right?
Yeah, I actually was more responding to what seemed to be the general consensus that a lot of people had, which is the tournament was boring. And for me, my general rule when I write about, whether it's writing about sports or writing about movies or politics, is that if it's boring, I'm doing a really bad job of describing what's going on, because life is boring. These things are very exciting. So for me, the fun part about the tournament is, even if you don't get a lot of upsets like we didn't get in the first weekend, and you get all these, why is the tournament more exciting? Why are there more upsets? Then you get what we really had for the next 48 hours, which was insanity. You know, that the Wisconsin-Villanova game, in retrospect, when you look at some of the upsets that happened later in the weekend, the Wisconsin-Villanova upset, even though this is defending champions, almost feels like less of an upset. If anything, Wisconsin was so underseeded, it was funny to watch. They talked to Jay Wright, the Villanova coach, before the game, and he was like, I can't believe we're playing a team that has a bunch of guys that played in the national championship game 2 years ago in the second round. This is supposed to be an Elite Eight game. At the very least, I mean, you saw that, you know, you saw Wisconsin, Nigel Hayes and Brandon Koenig and Ethan Happ. These are just terrific players, particularly those first two, that with the experience that they have. They were not scared of a team that just had that incredible win last year. So if anything, I thought, wow, that Wisconsin-Villanova game is going to be the biggest upset we see all weekend. And then we saw Duke went down. I think Duke might have been the, as we all know, when Duke loses, it's sort of in the tournament, it's sort of kind of like a national holiday for the tournament.
Yeah,
all
right. Kind
of comes together and enjoy and memes it up. So I think that was a fun name. I think that's the important thing to remember about the tournament, is that even when it feels like, oh man, there's no upsets, where's the crazy moments? The crazy moments are always coming, because the tournament itself is almost engineered to produce them.
Now, Will, we were going over your rootability rankings for the remaining 16 teams in the tournament, and I had a question about the place that you would slide UCLA in there, because as I read your description of UCLA. I don't see the word LeVar anywhere in the description. So is it that you have do you have LeVar Ball fatigue? Is he in the back of your mind as you slide them down to number 12?
Well, I think it's certainly not fatigue with him. He is such an incredible player. It's more, you know, anytime you do a rootability ranking, I think a lot of people always want, if you're unaffiliated, there's a natural tendency to gravitate toward the underdog, a natural tendency to gravitate toward the team that has not done it before. And so the people at the top of the rankings are Gonzaga or Wisconsin or even Butler or Purdue. Like, those are some of the more likable teams up there. I don't think this individual UCLA team is unlikable, and for crying out loud, he is doing things that if he were playing for Gonzaga or one of those Wisconsin, absolutely they'd be up there. I feel like you're not necessarily rooting for individual players in this regard, particularly because, listen, he's going to be in the NBA next year, and we're going to forget what college he went to. So, like, to me, I feel like what you're doing when you're doing the rootability rankings, you're rooting less about individual players and rooting more about kind of like the history of these schools and kind of the history in the tournament. So for me, as much as I enjoy him, I actually find that UCLA team very fun to watch. It's always fun when the team doesn't really care about defense that much and just has this incredible offensive talent. That's something you don't see a lot in college basketball, and I always kind of appreciate it when it's not a Boeheim, Tony Bennett, slowdown zone type of game. So they're a fun team to watch. But rootability-wise, I still kind of had to stick with the teams that haven't been there before.
You're listening to the Midday Grind here on 590 The Fan, KFNS. We have Will Leach from Sports Unearthed on the line talking some NCAA hoops before we maybe talk a little Cardinal baseball before we get off of the line with him. On your Sports Unearthed post this morning about the rootability, you have Kansas at 11. Now, do you have to set aside your personal feelings about the head coach of Kansas? Do you still have hard feelings about him and his hair plugs who spurned Bill Self, who spurned your beloved University of Illinois?
I will say that there was certainly a time where there was ill will toward Bill Self from Illini fans. I think two coaches later, I think that's mostly gone, particularly when you see the success that he's had at Kansas and what he's been able to do there. It's very obvious now that you know, I think one of the things that Bill Self did at the time we resented him for, and now we kind of appreciate it, is he, you know, Illinois has always been a very excellent program. But we thought Bill Self made Illinois think that we were a top 10 program, and it turns out no, we were a top 20 program that had Bill Self, which turned them into a top 10 program. So I think that with Self leaving and the coaches that have come afterwards who have had their own credits, I don't mean to disparage either Bruce Weber or John Gross too much, but they were not Bill Self. And I think that the success he's had, ultimately I think most people have made their peace with Self now, even if they do indeed like to make fun of those hair plugs still.
Yeah, still. And they were kind of noticeable over the weekend. He got a little warm in the gym down there at Tulsa, and they kind of stood up a little bit.
See, I guess this is just my youth showing, but I've never really – I can't spot a plug. Well, I don't have it yet.
It's been well-rumored on the internets for a long time.
Yeah.
So speaking of Illinois, they are introducing – I think they introduced their head coach just about an hour ago, I think noontime here, St. Louis time. Brad Underwood, formerly of Oklahoma State. It seems like the athletic director there, who used to be here at WashU, found out that Underwood was not happy at Oklahoma State, was only making about $1 million, and they pounced pretty quickly. I mean, they've only been searching for a coach about a week now, right?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of his Josh Whitman's modus operandi. Remember, this is how he hired Lovie Smith, for crying out loud. The last thing anybody thought at the beginning of March last year was that he was going to fire the interim coach and hire Lovie Smith. He'd been on the job for roughly 8 hours when he did that. So he likes to be pretty stealth about these things and kind of come about it in an unconventional way. And a lot of this comes from the fact we talk about a lot in sports about people coming home and people trying to, you know, get back to their home program. Whitman is a guy that he did a great job at WashU, but WashU is a very small school. You don't know how he's going to do at a bigger school like that. But the passion that he had for Illinois, and frankly, the amount of money he's been able to spend in Illinois in the past has always sometimes been a little stingy with coaches and be able to spend at the level that you really need to. For him to not that combination of Illinois being willing to spend and Whitman being resourceful, and you know, he went after Monty Williams. He's denied whether he went after Monty Williams or not, whether he did or whether he didn't. It's an unconventional thing where he shoots really high and gets resourceful and tries to try new things. You know, obviously, as Missouri fans know, when you have a coach firing, the first thing everybody does is come up with their list of people and they come up with a list of possible candidates. And, you know, Quanzo Martin was on Missouri's list, Quanzo Martin was on Illinois' list, and Illinois made these lists of all of these people. Everyone makes their list. And Brad Underwood was on none of these lists. Now, of course, the reason that Brad Underwood was on none of these lists is because he had only come from Oklahoma State. He had only been in Oklahoma State 1 year. But to me, that's also kind of the point is, you know, Oklahoma State showed that, like, you can't underpay coaches. You know, if Brad Underwood would have been, if anyone would have thought that Brad Underwood would have been available, he would have been at the absolute top of any of those lists. But not only what he did with Stephen F. Austin, but took an Oklahoma State team that had Juwan Evans and had a good player, but was really strong at the beginning of the year. And he got them turned around through, you know, being a basketball whisperer. So I think that there's a lot of excitement. And it was a surprise because it was a surprise for Oklahoma State. It was a surprise for Illinois that he would even be available. And I have to say, as someone that grew up with the Bragging Rights games, it is very exciting for me to see Missouri, I think, make a very quality hire themselves. I think there was some debate about, did Missouri, I think Martin claimed that Illinois had given him a big offer or something. I question that, to be honest. But either way, Martin is a terrific coach and is going to make them better. And Illinois has a guy that they're extremely excited about. So to get that Bragging Rights game, which to me, growing up in Madison, Illinois, the Bragging Rights game was one of the highlights of the sports calendar every year.
Oh,
but to see it lose some of that luster, I'd love to see that back going again.
That was just mentioned the show before us, Frank Cusimano's show. He had on from our old stomping grounds, Mark Tupper from the Decatur Herald and Review. And that was one of the things he mentioned he was looking forward to, was these two guys energizing that game after this past Bragging Rights game in December was so depressing, where I think they only sold about 2/3 of the tickets and maybe half the people showed up. And most of them were wearing orange because the people who wore black and gold were kind of embarrassed to show up to support this team. And now you've kind of got a rebirth with both these. And I spent a couple years in Central Illinois, and I know how much of a religion Illini basketball is. You know, it's kind of the big things, you know, the Cardinal Cub rivalry in the middle of the state. The Bears pretty much control most of the state. But then I think the big thing that people that all kind of agree on is Illinois basketball. And it, like you said, there was a time where you felt like it was a top 10 team. Where do you think, what do you think the ceiling is for Illinois basketball and this resurgence and what Underwood could do?
Well, I think that there's two different ceilings. One, the ceiling is the roof. I've heard that recently.
Perfect.
There's two different kinds of ceilings for Illinois basketball. One is the I think reasonable ceiling, which is that this is a top 15-20 program. I think not just you've got access to Chicago, slight access, which we'll get to in a moment, but you've got Indianapolis, you've got St. Louis, you've got a rabid fan base, you've got a completely retooled State Farm Center, which now has been frustrating because they've made it to where the students are more on the floor to have a better atmosphere. Unfortunately, during that time, the team has been very disappointing, and they haven't been able to really use that home court advantage. But I think when you get Illinois fans energized, I mean, it's funny to watch people get excited about Bill Murray with the Cubs and Bill Murray with Xavier. Bill Murray was originally an Illinois guy. Remember that great Darren Williams, D. Brown team? Bill Murray was like the fun guy, and he's wearing orange in the stands, and he's going crazy over that comeback. So it was really just a terrific – the excitement when Illinois basketball is humming is unlike really a lot of teams in college basketball. So they've got all these advantages. The one thing that people think – whenever people try to talk about Illinois being a top 10 job, a really high-level job, they're really talking about if they could solve Chicago. And generally speaking, Chicago is – vexed Illinois coaches all the way back to Lou Henson. There's always this assumption that if you could somehow tap into the great Chicago system, which oftentimes the Chicago prospect is ever more overrated than a Chicago prospect by Chicago people. A lot of these guys turn out really well, but you never quite know because it's just kind of a cartel down there. So everyone always thinks that you're going to be able to untap Chicago and turn Illinois into Duke or something. I don't know about that. I don't know if you even want to do that. That could put Illinois in a direction that I don't know they want to be going necessarily, to put it that way. But certainly, it's the potential of a great job. Again, not just Chicago, but Indianapolis and St. Louis are terrific places. They're right by Champaign. Champaign is essentially located in all of those. I think that they've suffered reputation-wise because, frankly, people in Chicago think of downstate as like Cowtown. And they just kind of denigrated a little bit. So I think love the Northwestern thing a little bit. So I think people are very eager to get Illinois basketball back going. And I think even if they don't solve Chicago, it's a top 15, 20 job. And if they ever solve Chicago, or if they even want to solve Chicago, then it really skyrockets.
Now, Will, we'd be remiss to have you on and not get a little bit of Cardinals talk in here. I don't know if you saw today, but the Reds named Scott Feldman their opening day starter, who played a central role in perhaps one of the great dramas in Cardinal history. There has been largely, aside from Alex Reyes, a drama-free spring training. I know that for the most part, we've had the Matt Adams and left field experiment is the only exciting thing going on over the last week here. What have you seen from the Cardinals this spring, and what are your expectations going into this season?
You know, if anything, it's been encouraging in just contrast to last spring. You know, last spring, they just kind of felt snake bit from the beginning last year. You know, you watched that team in spring training, and they were having players-only meetings, and they were missing cutoff guys, and they were making base-running errors, and just all sorts of it had all the looks of a very disorganized spring training, something that the Cardinals have always prided themselves on not happening. And I think it's hard to argue that those same problems that vexed them in spring training last year, they clearly followed them into the regular season, and I think ultimately cost them a playoff spot. I remember, as frustrating as the Cardinals were last year, they still only missed the playoffs by one game. I think it gets forgotten a little bit because last year was so frustrating. It's been encouraging to me to see not much of that happening now. They seem to be kind of running very crisply. It's been very encouraging to see how immediately Fowler just seems to be the absolute perfect fit in a way that he even seems to have charmed Matheny, who I would say sensibility-wise is not necessarily the fun guy that Fowler is. And so I think that helped. Certainly the Reyes thing was disappointing. But remember, Reyes, you know, I would rather never want to lose someone like Alex Reyes, and you're never a better team because you don't have him. But you'd rather lose him this year than in, say, 2019, when you're going to be counting on him. Like, if he's going to become pre-disastered, as you might say, about a house, at least he in 2 years, he'll have this in his past, and the Cardinals will really need him then. Now, they've got some options back there. Walker has looked great this spring. He's been really encouraging. Just to see, you know, the bullpen, I think, is still kind of in flux a little bit. They've had some injuries there. But otherwise, you know, this looks like a Cardinals spring that we have gotten used to over the last few years. And again, it's just spring training. You don't want to overreact to it. But generally speaking, when the Cardinals have had good spring trainings, it's carried over to the regular season. And last year, we saw what happened when they didn't.
Will, last week, I believe it was, Joe Madden, the Cubs manager, on radio in Chicago, was talking about the political climate here in the United States and used the phrase, people need to learn to lose. So learn to lose. What should Cardinals fans do with that information?
Well, I think you should probably not listen to Joe Madden about politics. I think that's probably the first thing that you should not do. I would say that if anything, obviously as frustrating and as surreal as the Cubs championship was, and frankly continues to be, one thing that I think has been good and I think can continue to be good for the Cardinals, it has given them a kick in the pants. It's given, you know, I think it's difficult to argue that there has been a sense, if not complacency, in the Cardinals front office. I think there's been a little bit of, we have these things, that we have a way that we do these things. I'm not calling it the Cardinals way, that's something different. But we have a certain system that we adhere to, and we will not go outside of that range. And that's just kind of what we do. And it succeeded for us, so we're going to continue to do that, which is great. It worked for 15 years. It's been a terrific thing. But you know what? Like, eventually the Cubs giant woke up and you realize, oh wow, if they have put really smart people in charge, they have a ton of money and can be this giant. I think the Cardinals felt like they were doing everything right. And they were, they've won 2 World Series. They've had all this success. But part of that's because the Cubs were a mess that entire time. They were not the challenge that they probably should have been during the Cardinals during that time. So now that the Cubs have leapt forward and won the World Series, still so strange to say that, but now that they've won that World Series, I think that you saw that with the Fowler signing. I would like to see them go even more. I still feel like Encarnacion, at the price the Indians got for him, was something the Cardinals needed to at least consider. But, you know, you've seen a little bit more aggressiveness from the organization. Not a lot more. They're still not, you know, they're not like crazy free spinning, but you've seen aggressiveness from them that I think has been lacking in the past. And I think was frankly necessary to kind of counter what the Cubs have been doing. I still think the Cardinals are better than the Cubs this year, but what the Cubs' success has done is it's made the Cardinals take some more chances and push a little bit in a way that I think they're going to have to. Not just with the Cubs. You know, the Brewers have a whole system they're putting together. The Pirates are still going to be a good team. There was a time where the Cardinals could dominate this division almost just by being consistent every year and waiting for other teams to fall off. Now you've got to make those big moves and be aggressive, and I think the Cubs have made that a pretty stark reality now with their success.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've run out of time. We got to run to break. So we super appreciate you coming on and talking some hoops and Illinois basketball and a little bit of Cardinals baseball. So we appreciate it. We'll have to bug you for our early morning show, 5 to 7, the Game Time AM show. Maybe we'll talk soon here around.
He's in Eastern time. We can get him up.
Yeah, we can get him up at 7 sometimes, maybe. So hey, we appreciate.
I have 2 children. I'm up at 3 a.m.
There we go. There you go. Perfect. That's perfect for us. All right.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be in touch.
Thanks,
Will Leach. Thank you, sir. All right. We need to run a break because after the break, we have Craig Berube, the head coach of the Chicago Wolves, on to talk the Wolves' success and how he's helped influence a couple of the Blues players that are now on the roster that spent some time in Chicago. So we'll have him right as soon as we come back from break here on the Midday Grind on 590 The Fan, KFNS St. Louis.